Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode.
I am always inspired by the See Something, Do Something guests. These are the people who are making a difference in their communities and in our world. Allison Dehoney is one of those change agents for good. Welcome, Allison, and good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Thank you for having me.
Oh my goodness, it's my pleasure. Allison, full disclosure, my allergies are bothering me. So there's a chance I could sneeze. There's a chance I could cough. Okay, just so you know.
Okay.
All
okay,
right.
No problem.
But I did not want to postpone or move this interview. I've been excited about it for a long time. So yay. Now, you're in my hometown of Buffalo, and you've got numerous awards in Western New York because of the work you're doing with urban gardening. You founded two organizations that are garnering a lot of attention, Buffalo Go Green, got that right, and Urban Fruits and Veggies. I want to talk about each of the businesses. Do you mind starting with Urban Fruits and Veggies? That's the urban agriculture business. I know you give food away. I know you do community education. But I know that's not it. So tell me more and tell us more about what you do.
Sure. So I have to say, and I always give this person all the credit, the idea was not mine. So I have a pretty good relationship with our common council here in Buffalo. And I was speaking with one of the councilmen, and they were talking about the lack of access to healthy foods, the lack of grocery stores, our really deplorable health outcomes. And this person knew that I had run a business in the past, and he said, "You should try to do something about it." And I said, "I can't do anything about that." So, I started to think about it, and I started to do some research, and all of the things that he just mentioned, there were facts upon facts about that: lack of access to healthy foods, lack of grocery outlets, deplorable health outcomes throughout Erie County, which is the county that Buffalo sits in New York State. So I thought, well, maybe I could just, get like some a van and give out some fruits and vegetables on the weekend. Well, when I started to speak with people, and I realized maybe it would be good to have like a little garden. So, but I didn't know anything about agriculture, and I didn't know how to grow anything. So I was lucky enough to find two people who were like, "This is a great idea. I want to help you. I'm all in." So we found three vacant city lots, which we have 8,000 in our city. So
8,000 vacant lots?
8,000 vacant lots.
Okay.
That are owned by the municipality. Really, they're under the municipality's management, but they're really owned by the residents of the city of Buffalo.
Okay.
So it was really easy to find three contiguous vacant lots. So we did that. And with the help of some volunteers from Nichols School, we built the farm in like 3 days. Raised bed farm because the soil in Buffalo, where Rust Belt City is quite contaminated, so we can't plant anything in the ground. So that was a whole education piece. And once we built that raised bed garden, things started to take off. So then I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to get everything to where it needs to be? So we got a truck and we wrapped it, and then we started harvesting those vegetables and going to markets, and that was the beginning, and we're still going.
Okay. So who was the council person?
It was Damone Smith.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. And great that you give him his props. I love that.
Oh yeah. I always do. He's like, "You don't have to say that anymore, else," and it's been 10 years.
I want to go back for a minute. I want to just go backwards. I didn't ask you about your background. I know you didn't grow up on a farm. I know that. I also know you didn't start your career planting seeds and raising beds and harvesting crops. In fact, you were a very successful businesswoman. You were an account exec who managed a diverse portfolio of clients. You were a leader in the residential insurance industry. Tell me a little bit about your career before you moved into the nonprofit space.
Sure. So I have an MBA, so I've always been on the business track academically. And then, yeah, professionally, I spent almost my entire career in insurance. Wherever I moved to, I was able to find land great positions in various insurance companies. And I did a lot of client executive work, and that work requires a real intimate personal touch because these companies pay millions of dollars in insurance premiums on the commercial side, and they want to know that they have a person who is there for any complaints or problems or issues. So problem solving and managing personalities and managing problems was something that I became quite good at. And I really feel like that my academic and professional training has set me up well to be an entrepreneur.
And you view your role as an entrepreneur, not as a nonprofit executive.
Yes, I do, because nonprofits like to pretend that they're not businesses, but they really are.
And they would probably be more successful if they acknowledged the fact that they are businesses and started
Exactly, Joanne,
operating.
exactly.
So I'm curious about the specifics of what from your prior life prepared you for this life.
So I never thought I would be in this space. I was never one of those people who, like, growing up, I knew I wanted to be like a doctor, lawyer, and I so admired those folks because they just always seemed like they had it all together. Like, at 12, and at like I have a niece who at 12, she her teeth were a little crooked. She knew she wanted to be a dentist, and she is a dentist,
I love it. And her teeth are straight.
and her teeth are very straight. So I that was never me. I kind of like landed in insurance, and then I kind of, took on these various roles. And but then when I did that research and I thought, people don't have that those basics like food. Like my mother was from the Caribbean, so food was like a labor of love, and we always had it in abundance. And if anyone was coming over, the plan was, what will we feed them? So to just sit and marinate with the fact that there are a lot, not just one off here and there, a lot of people who struggle in this area, and especially to think about it for children, to not know if you're going to have dinner tonight. So that was really the impetus. That was what got me going. And then to learn and to see the data surrounding health outcomes that are directly related to diet further fueled the vision of what this business could be and do.
That's interesting. I keep hearing this term. Food desert. What does it mean? And how does your work impact these food deserts? Because when you're talking about hunger, I'm imagining that it's somehow tied to these food deserts. So will you provide clarity on that?
Yeah, so the term food desert is really a made-up, poor definition of what is really happening across the country, mainly in urban spaces, but also in rural spaces. So, desert is a naturally occurring space on the planet. Lack of grocery stores and lack of access to healthy food is by no means naturally occurring. So it really does not, it's not a good term to use to explain what's happening. And I mean, Joanne, you and I both went to high school in Buffalo, and I did not even realize at that time, maybe you did, the rich, rich agriculture in Erie and Niagara County, which are the two counties on the western end of New York State bordering Canada. We have some of the most beautiful farms. So to think that all the farms surrounding the two cities, Buffalo and Niagara Falls, and as you extend east to Rochester, et cetera, that people struggle with access to healthy food options. It doesn't make any sense. We've got beautiful apple orchards. Anything you want grows here, pretty much, with the exception of tropical fruits and vegetables, obviously. So there should be no reason why everyone shouldn't be able to participate in the bounty of what is grown right here in the Niagara region. Did I answer your question?
You did. Number one, you cleared up the food desert thing, that's just a term that somebody created that is inaccurate. And now the second part of my question I want us to get to, which is why? Like, why do people lack access to, and no, I did not realize that we had lots of farmland around us in Erie and Niagara County. So no, I didn't know that. I knew that there was a grape growing region in there's a little wine region. I did know that. I don't know what that says about me that I knew that and not the other. But anyway,
I don't know, Joanne. What does that say about me?
so what is it that prevents access? What is it? How do we go from, I don't know, wherever people are growing stuff to Jefferson and Genesee or to Bust Dye Street or wherever and not have what's the missing bridge, I guess is my question.
So it's the history and the food system is so it had good intentions. When two parents working, children going to school, after school activities, at some point in our history, the kitchen shut down. And the idea that I could get my entire family fed by going through a drive-through in 5 minutes became the norm instead of, okay, what's going to be for dinner? Somebody, mom, dad, sister, brother, somebody is going to go home and prepare a meal for the family. That became lost. That became burdensome. That became unnecessary. And so the idea of going to get vegetables and washing them and chopping them up and creating a meal as opposed to driving through and getting burger, fries, shake, it just kind of took over. And as you look at the landscape of cities everywhere, you see that. Like, how fast can I get a meal? And there is something called slow food, which was started many, many years ago. And slow food just became irrelevant, unnecessary, and unimportant. And we are seeing the ramifications of those decisions in our health outcomes.
What was slow food?
Slow food is, well, most people should understand that the longer it takes to prepare a meal, usually it's the healthier it is for you. Or the longer it takes to cook. So, like, even though vegetables can be sauteed quickly, that prep time, takes time. So, those are things that are considered slow food, soups and stews that, you're parents or grandparents
I
used to,
promised you a cough.
you got it.
Go ahead.
Slow foods that, took preparation and, those types of foods became just not something that, was attractive. So That's why we're where we are with the food desert situation. Well, if people aren't going to the grocery store and grocers are losing money, maybe they don't need to have three stores in a various radius. They could just consolidate it to one. So now people have to drive further or they have to get a ride. And those are also things that those who coined the term food desert take into consideration. Like, how many people live in this radius and how far do they have to drive to get to a grocery store? So grocery stores began to shut down and consolidate for a
But
number
only
of
in certain
reasons.
communities.
Only in certain communities, which was easy. Well, maybe we didn't really want to be here
Anyway,
anyway. So this is perfect now. The numbers are down, we're out. And that's just one reason related to the food desert and air quote situation. So lack of grocery stores became a thing across the country, closing, consolidating, and either building or remodeling in the more desirable areas. So folks on the lower economic scale can figure out a way to get to the grocery store, do what you need to do. It's, that's not a concern, and it's a business. Bottom line is profit. And we understand that. However, it has caused a serious problem for folks, like I said, on the lower economic scale, and folks who don't have transportation, struggle with transportation, folks who are disabled, those folks that need to wait on the public transports or family or friends to get their food. It's a real issue.
Now, you said that this issue manifests not just in urban communities, but in rural as well. What does it
Yeah.
look like in a rural community?
So, we over the years and in different spaces, there was all this focus on urban. And then, as I went to like panel discussions and Buffalo Go Green partners with Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus to lead the Western New York Food as Medicine Coalition,
Oh,
which
interesting.
brings in a lot of players, brings in the county, it brings in our rural partners. And one day someone stood up and said, in urban areas, at least you have a bus to wait on. In rural areas, folks were literally doing their grocery shopping at the dollar store.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
It is heartbreaking, Joanne. It really is. And when you think about the poverty levels in the rural areas, the number of households that receive supplemental nutrition assistance program, the SNAP benefits with their EBT cards, those numbers are more prevalent than the urban numbers.
Really?
It's, oh yeah, everyone thinks that, all the poverty is in cities. No, there's tremendous poverty in rural areas. It's just like somehow not addressed and doesn't get as much attention as like urban areas because, there's the crime and the activity both negative and positive. But rural areas are really struggling with food insecurity, and have been for a while now.
That's very interesting. And that's something like when I think of a rural area, I do think that, well, you could have your own garden, you could grow your own vegetables, you could do all of these things. And that sounds like that's not the reality.
Right.
Yeah, sounds like that's not real. Well, first thing, I want to keep this conversation going, but we are not going to have a lot more time today, but I want to keep it going. So I'd like for you to come back. But how can people support the work that you're doing with Buffalo Go Green and the Urban Fruits and Veggies?
Sure. So, folks can go to buffalogogreen.org all one word, buffalogogreen.org. And there is a donate button on our website. But I would encourage folks to, look around our website and see what we're doing. We just put up our 2025 mobile market schedule, which is always an exciting time. If students want to come, if people are interested in farm tours, we do that. So peruse our website, and if you're inclined to donate, it all goes to a very good cause.
Now, what's this mobile marketplace? What is that?
So it's farmers market season. It starts our markets, our first market is May 29th this year. At the Delavan Grider Community Center. And our schedule is there of where we'll be every week until the end of October.
Okay. Oh, that's very. So do you move around or do you just go to Delavan
Yes, we move
Grider?
around. Yep, we're someplace different every day of the week. Same
Okay.
time every day of the week.
Okay, do you cover, north, south, east, west Buffalo?
We do from Kenmore and throughout the city of Buffalo.
Okay. All right, that's cool. That's very interesting. Yes, I want to keep talking about this. I want to talk about why you decided to put your life's energy into this work because this is a almost a calling, even though you said you didn't, know at 12 what you wanted to do. This seems like a calling. So I appreciate you coming on today. And will you come back so we can keep talking?
I sure will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison Dehoney, Buffalo Go Green. Thank you again. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.